Hello, everybody. Dr. Lonnie Stewart here from the Healthcare Education Transformation Podcast. Are you a physical therapy student about to start studying for the National Physical Therapy Examination? Or maybe you're a professor, a program director, or a clinical instructor who teaches DPT students preparing for the NPTE? Either way, we would recommend checking out our sponsor, NPTE Final Frontier, and the community they've built around preparing for and succeeding on the NPTE. That exam and the preparation that goes along with it can be long, tedious, difficult, and stress-inducing, but it doesn't have to be. NPTE Final Frontier has the tactics and resources to help address all of the usual barriers. They even have scholarships to help with NPTE study courses, FSBPT registration fees, and even research opportunities. And if that's not enough, they're even donating to the very first annual HET Podcast Scholarship to be awarded at the end of every year. Go to npteff.com for all of the details and use code HET for 10% off all purchases. Links to both the NPTE Final Frontier and their scholarship options are available in the show notes. And now, let's get ready to learn.
Hello, everyone. Once again, welcome to the Healthcare Education Transformation Podcast. And I always get that messed up because I'm saying too many words at once. My name is Sean Bagby, and today I've got Holly Clinch from St. Kate's University with us. I'm going to let Holly introduce herself. And first question we always start out with, Holly, is just introduce yourself real quick. And then what is your educational background?
As Sean said, my name is Holly Clinch, and I became a PT in 1984, which I can't believe it was that long ago, back from the University of Minnesota. Got my bachelor's degree. I got a master's degree in organizational leadership from St. Kate's in 2000, and then completed my transitional DPT degree also at St. Kate's in 2009. I also went through APTA's educational leadership training. It's now the fellowship in education, higher ed, something like that. But did that in 2015, and then that's the point where I became program director at St. Kate's. I'd been there since 1998 as director of clinical ed, and then took over the program director position. So I've been at St. Kate's for 26 years.
Wow, that's quite amazing. And we give a history of St. Kate's for people that don't know its history within the PTA profession.
Sure. We were one of the first two PTA programs in the country. So we admitted our first batch of students in 1967 and graduated them in 69. So we pride ourselves on having this rich history and reputation in our community. We also are unique in that we have a DPT program right within our institution. Literally, we share offices with DPT faculty, we share classrooms, we share equipment, we work very closely with them and do a lot of joint activities with our DPT partners in the classroom. And then we also have a bachelor's degree program in physical therapist assistant, which started in 2020. And we've had people graduating from that program. So got a lot of different things going on at St. Kate's. We like to consider ourselves as innovators.
Yeah, and that's definitely something I want to talk to you about today is the bachelor's program. And full disclosure, I teach in that bachelor's program. I teach a leadership capstone course at the end of it. But I've always been a big proponent of the bachelor's programs for PTAs. And just wanted to kind of get your journey on how that started, how you've grown it, and what you see coming out of it with your graduates so far.
You know, it came just over the years of our grads wanting to know what was next for them. And I think some of them would go into PT back when PT was still a master's. I think it was a little easier for them to transition from the associate's degree to the master's program. That became a little harder without a bachelor's degree when the PT programs transitioned to a DPT degree. But we also heard from a lot of our alums and just PTA clinicians in the community that they wanted something more, not necessarily to be a PT. A lot of times I think PTAs get approached like if they want to develop themselves or go further that they should become a PT. And as one of my colleagues says, you know, I just want to be the best PTA that I can be. I don't want to be a PT, but that doesn't mean I don't want to continue to grow. And so we decided that at least for the beginning development of our bachelor's program, that it wouldn't be focused necessarily on getting people the prerequisites that they needed to go to a PT program, but it would really be focused on those things that our clinical advisory groups and our alums were telling us were skills that they needed. So they needed to be able to really think on their feet, to have a better understanding of healthcare issues, you know, globally, to have some skills that they wanted to develop that were more PT specific, but also to just to have a more well-rounded base in leadership. And so we developed our curriculum. That actually was my project when I was in the Educational Leadership Institute program. You have to pick a project. It's a year-long seminar thing, and you pick a project that you're going to work on that will benefit your institution. And so that was my project. And as I said, I graduated from that in 2015, but it still took until 2020 for it to be the right time for the university to do the activity. And it's kind of funny because it started, you know, 2020, right in the midst of COVID, but it actually, the timing worked out kind of well because I think there were some PTAs who were furloughed that took advantage of the downtime to work on coming back to the program. So it's a mix of PTA or physical therapy specific coursework, some coursework that you might be taking with other healthcare students, such as nursing students, public health, and those types of courses. And then there's some traditional, I guess what you would consider business or leadership coursework too. And a couple courses then that the university throws in that are St. Kate specific courses that people need to take. And that really aligns well too, because St. Kate's has a focus and a mission tied to leadership and social justice. And it aligns really well with the vision and mission of APTA in terms of our, you know, making a difference with society as a whole, not just our patients. So we are really happy with the program. We don't have huge numbers participating in it, but those that do stick with it, they are very dedicated students, and we've had some graduates now. We've still got some people that, you know, people can take whatever path they want to in terms of how many credits they want to take each semester, how fast they want to go through the program. We've had a couple people step in and out because they've had a child or two children, things like that. Life changes, you know, they move across country or something. That is something I should mention, that it is a totally online program. So anybody can do it across the country. And that's how we can have people like you teach in our program too, which you do a fabulous job. I have to say that too.
Yeah. And one thing I've noticed from your students in the coursework is not everyone's local, but they've all kind of got a drive to do something unique in healthcare, whether it be go on to DPT school or passionate about changing something in the work environment. Mm-hmm. Tying that back into the social justice component of St. Kate's, what helps set that apart on the students that end up going into your program? What helps them be successful in those areas?
Well, I think part of it is we start in one of the early courses that's a PTA specific course in looking at themselves, really analyzing their own leadership skills. And it's amazing to me. We've had PTAs who have come to our program, they're running their own business, and they still don't think of themselves as leaders. And I guess it's because of that A in the end of their credential that they just they don't recognize themselves that they are a leader, and which cracks me up because I think, well, every patient you work with probably expects you to be taking a leadership role. But I think that's what students will reflect upon is just the empowerment that they've gotten as they've worked their way through the program. They feel much more confident in their ability to throw out ideas in their workplace, to offer to lead projects. Not all of them are going into different workplaces or different roles, but they're just taking a much more active role. They have ideas for things that are going to change in their departments. But we've also seen ones who have gone in different directions. Somebody was going to go on to get his nursing home administration license. We've had people that have gone on to master's degrees. We have had some people that have gone on to DPT programs, and we've had some people that have gone on to rehab director positions within their organization. So and again, just some who have gotten empowered to recognize that the organization they're working at is not a good fit for them and their skills. And so they felt more confident in leaving and taking new positions. And I think knowing what questions to ask about the culture of an organization and an environment. So it's been really rewarding for me, just personally as an instructor, to see how these students change after they go through the program. And it's not that, we're giving them any of that self-knowledge that I guess they didn't have, but it's just that they're recognizing it in a different way. And that's really cool.
To me, it's a process of self-discovery that occurs between the difference of, we talk about it in PTA education, how the associate's degree, everything's so compressed. And so it feels like you're going A to B to C all the way down the line to get all the criteria in that they need to pass their boards. But in the bachelor's program, it is like a little bit more self-discovery and a little bit more time to focus on you and your growth as a clinician and as a person that I think sets that apart, just in my view. Sorry, probably still your answer there.
No, I totally agree.
But that's been the thing I've seen. So like, what has kind of, as you're recruiting for this program, what have kind of been like the makeup of the students that end up coming into the program for you?
Well, it's really been interesting that most of the students do come from outside Minnesota. We've had a few local ones, but East Coast, West Coast, South. I mean, they come from all over the country. And I would say we've even had students who already have a bachelor's degree who want to just get one in PTA. And we do build in some coursework and content too that sets them up for getting a few other credentials, like a health coaching credential or their exercise or conditioning and strengthening specialists, CSCS, things like that they can do. And even the APTA's advanced proficiencies, they don't get that designation, but they take all the prereq courses. So they come in, some of them just, are looking at, maybe doing something different in the future. Most just say they want to become a better PTA. They want to work at the top of their license. So things like pharmacology and we have a nutrition course that they can take. And, some of the exercise, the manual therapy that we cover, it's things that we just didn't have time to spend in the original associate degree curriculum. Like you said, it's just so compressed. So for these students, they love just getting back. And I think having the clinical perspective now, they apply that knowledge in a little bit different way than they did when they were in PTA school. And they're there because they want to be there. I think your point that the type of student that's there, and I guess that's why we don't, Our attrition is so low, is people are making an active decision to come back. They're doing it. They're not saying I have to do this because I want this job. They're just saying they want to be a better PTA, a lifelong learner. And then I think the job opportunities, they come along because of that, not necessarily they're not doing it for the job opportunities.
I would agree. And definitely something I see in the program is the ability for students to kind of reflect on their journey so far and determine where they want to personally go, and not just not have a passive career, but be an active participant in their career, which I think is just a wonderful thing that comes from the ability to do this. So you did bring up working at the top of their license. Do you think the program like this has helped your graduates become better advocates for the profession and for advocating for licensure change?
That's a good question. You know, I use, of course, a lot of my APTA background and APTA documents when I teach the leadership course. That's kind of one of the first PTA specific courses they take in the program. But I also try not to make it a commercial for APTA, as I am sometimes accused of doing from my associate degree students. But it's because I do believe that, you know, APTA and advocacy and all that is so important. You know, we ask the students at the beginning of the program to set some goals for themselves. And I think some will start out with conservative goals, but it does seem like by the time they get through the program that they're looking bigger and at more broad things that they do want to make a difference in. We see people who've gotten more involved in the APTA and different FSBPT, things like that.
And now for a quick shout out to our newest sponsor, Varela Financial. If you're a physical therapist and you have student loan debt, you got to talk to these guys. What makes them unique is that they view financial planning like running hurdles on a track. And for PTs, the first hurdle many of us run into is student loan debt. Varela Financial will help you get over that hurdle. They not only take the time to explain to you which plans you individually qualify for and how those plans work, but they also take the time to show you what your individual case looks like, mapped out within each option. So if you're looking for help on your student loan debt or any area of personal finances, we recommend working with them. I use Varela Financial personally, and they were able to help me lower my student loan repayment from about $1,800 a month down to about $135 per month simply by finding the right repayment plan that best fit me, my family, and our life goals. You can check them out at VarelaFinancial.com. Link is in the show notes if you need it for reference, and tell them the HET podcast crew sent you. And now back to the show.
And I think that's just, you know, the first step is just getting connected to organizations like that and, you know, dipping your toe in the water. I think it's still scary for PTAs sometimes to be part of those bigger organizations. They don't necessarily feel like they belong and aren't always welcome depending on the organization, but got to be honest. But there does seem to be a newfound confidence to just learn and grow more. I know one of our grads said the PTs they work with were starting to refer some of their patients to put their patients on her caseload when they wanted certain manual techniques done because they felt like she had the best skills. Now we're very careful in Minnesota with what we teach in terms of joint mobilization and that kind of stuff. But we, you know, we also are working with students who are all across the country and have, you know, different laws and different regulations. So, you know, I understand the pros and cons of having PTAs do certain techniques, but I think that is an area where maybe you'll see some of our graduates maybe be able to show that they have a better competency, which might change things in the future.
Yeah, 100%. And just because of my background in teaching a external course in manual therapy, there really are very few exceptions, with the exception of Pennsylvania and a small minority where PTAs can't mobilize. It's just a matter of what degree they can mobilize to. And part of it is, as I'm always saying when I teach, that is know your practice act and know your responsibilities, because it's a big thing. And I think as we as a profession grow and we start getting there for PTAs to be the extender of choice for the PT, especially as DBT knowledge and depth increases and we become more of the musculoskeletal expert for society, we're going to have PTAs that can do musculoskeletal type involvement and do things at a greater level. And that's why I'm always so excited to see your students come out with the bachelor's and how they progress and mature throughout the process, because it's it really is a great thing to see.
Well, it's always been fascinating to me as I've been in APTA meetings and things like that. You know, I had a prolonged conversation with someone one time who felt PTAs just couldn't do joint mobilization because they didn't understand osteokinematics or arthrokinematics. And I said, well, gosh, that's kind of funny because we teach that the very first week of the associate degree PTA curriculum. And they were very surprised by that. So, you know, sometimes some of the decisions are being made by people who don't necessarily have a full awareness of what PTA programs are teaching. So that bothers me. Now, I understand that there's lack of a better word, political reasons, or, you know, protecting the turf of physical therapy in general, why some of the decisions like this are made. But it's really, it's a matter of PTs and PTAs working together to be able to show, you know, that a PTA does know what they're doing in terms of this skill, that the PT is making an educated decision in asking the PTA to participate in joint mobilization. It's something that if we do better documentation and better interaction between the PT-PTA team, I think we can make a much better case for why this is a very appropriate skill for PTAs to do. I mean, we have patients. We teach patients how to do self-mobilization, and we have athletic trainers are, you know, doing it. I know I went to PT myself, and you know, the athletic trainer who was the aide in the clinic I went to was doing quite a bit of joint mobilization on me. And they could, because in Minnesota, our practice act says aides can get certain tasks directed to them by the PT. So it's kind of a weird workaround, but, you know, we want to avoid those kind of things. We want the people who really know the best to be doing it.
Yeah, and again, it's where I think like the expansion of education becomes important, because if we can teach these things, you know, where we're spending a decent amount of time, where it's not like a couple hours, but we're spending time practicing skills and getting them there. And I rarely hear this being a practice issue. I hear it more being a educational slash research slash political issue than that. And so, like, you know, we've got so many forefronts that I think manual will become less of an issue when we've got dry needling and things like that that are starting to occur in different levels of different things. And, like, you know, I think as education changes and advances for the PTA, that's going to lead us into more areas where again, where the PT-PTA team can become very proficient in doing these together. And again, I think you referenced something that I just wanted to say, like the PT-PTA team framework becomes so important. And like something I want to talk to you in the future is about, like, how, and because I grew up in a program that was PT and PTA. So, like, I knew the PTs I came out and worked with. It's different than when we're siloed in an individual, like, you don't understand each other. And I think that's something that we as PTA educators can probably work to do better, is making connections with PT programs and educating our students together, especially with distance education.
It is something that is really so important in terms of whatever we're doing in the clinic. I mean, we always talk about, you know, as part of the PT-PTA team, you should take advantage of whoever has the best skill set. And I mean, I worked with frail elderly. I did not do a lot of joint mobilizations in my career. I know there are PTAs who are way more skilled than I am in that area of practice. You know, it comes back to looking at what's your own personal scope of practice, scope of work, what you're skilled in, you know, and however we can educate PTAs, you know, whether it's a program like ours with the bachelors that has more time for manual therapy techniques, not just joint mobilization, but manual therapy in general, or if it's different continuing education courses, but it's getting those PTs and to understand. And I think it's getting better. I think our new graduate PTs have a much better understanding and a willingness to work with PTAs. They recognize the PTAs are coming in a lot of times with different skill sets, with different lived experiences, much more diverse backgrounds, maybe some more life experience than the PTs. So I think we are seeing it change, but you know, there's so many factors that impact the PTA team, not the least of them being payment issues and some of the challenges that are out there right now, staffing issues, things like that. But, you know, we're just trying to do our best, both in our associate degree program and our bachelor's program to, like I say, you know, I think about it, I'm dating myself now, but we used to watch the $6 million man show when I was a kid, and they would always say they were turning him into a bigger, faster, stronger man. And I think of it that way, like we're trying to just make our PTAs better, more efficient, stronger leaders, all of that, all those skills that will serve them well, no matter where they're working and what they're doing in or out of PT.
Well, and so like that brings up an interesting topic is out of PT. And this is something I have a conversation with several PTAs a year on, is like, you never take off that hat if you're still in healthcare. And so like, it doesn't matter. Like, so like I've had students from your classes ask me about like, if I go into managing X, Y, or Z of a hospital, I'm like, do it. You're not taking off your physical therapy hat. And that's what I love about like furthering their education. They're going to be advocates for PT no matter what they're doing, whether that's managing a physician's office, running a ER department, whatever. It's going to allow for us as a profession, the profession of physical therapy, to get greater access into some of those places. And you never know when we find the next frontier, like PTs in the ED or anything like that, that's going to help expand the profession.
We've had quite a few programs or quite a few students go through our program who work in home care. And I think that's an area where, you know, as we look at the people who want to age in place, and we're just going to see home care, I think, continue to expand. And so having PTAs with some more business knowledge and leadership skills in that kind of setting, I think that could really be an area where there's some new opportunities there for both PTs and PTAs, but especially our PTAs with those bachelor's degrees.
Agree. Well, Holly, we're getting close on time, so I'm going to ask you my last question, because I know with you, this might be a long one. And this can go to any level of PTA education, but the one question we always end with is, what is something you would like to see changed in PTA education?
Well, you know, I'm guessing that most people would expect for me to say, I think it has to go to the bachelor's. And I got to say that I don't think it has to be, but I think we need to, and we are going to be seeing more opportunities for people to join the profession at different levels or different ways. Some might, associate degree might be more appropriate. Others might be a bachelor's. I think there's lots of things. I mean, certainly I would like to see PTs have greater familiarity. And as I said, I think it's getting better with what PTAs do and how PTAs operate. You know, one thing that I would like to see changed is for PTAs who do want to go into PT, looking at you know, do they really need those same prerequisites? You know, do they need to have two semesters of entry-level chemistry and two semesters of entry-level physics? I mean, they've been working in the profession. They've been applying the knowledge that they got in those areas to, you know, hands-on techniques, to biophysical agents. Sometimes I think you can make a case for why even a PT needs a full year worth of those things. Physics, yes. Chemistry, maybe because I didn't do well in chemistry. But I think when a PTA has been working and is coming back to try to be a PT, that's a barrier that we're setting up for PTAs to go into PT school, to make them say, okay, you got to go back and do a couple more years just to get those prereqs. So there's at least one school that I won't name who's in the process of looking at a PTA to PT bridge program right now, where they're looking at, can we kind of give students some credit for their work experience? So that is one thing I hope for those PTAs, not that that should be the end all, you know, that would make it easier for them.
Yeah, and honestly, we are sending a PTA back to school right now to become a PT. And the reason why is because she has a desire and an affinity for treating women's health. And like, there are barriers for her as a PTA to do it. And she works in a rural clinic where the DPT is her husband. And so, like, it's a little bit harder for her, and she's got patients that want to come see her and she treats them, but like, he's avowing it's not his strong suit. He would rather not. So like, we're doing that, but like, that's one of the barriers that she's had to buckle down and do in a semester's worth of that. And she teaches continuing ed courses nationally and is a wonderful clinician. And that's been a little bit of a thing that I've been like, man, this is dumb that we're taking.
Yeah. And that reminds me of one more thing, if we've got time.
Yeah.
What I'd like to see changed, and we're working on it, is that notion that PT has to be the very first person to lay their hands on the patient. I mean, yes, the PT has to do the evaluation, but let's let the PTA take some vitals, take some measurements. I mean, think about it when you go to the doctor's office or the dentist. Usually see a slew of people before you see that licensed professional. And the PTAs are licensed professionals. And yes, I'm going to say they're professionals. I don't care what anyone says. Let's utilize PTAs better in that regard. Let's let them do data collection. Let's trust that they have the knowledge and the skills to recognize when they shouldn't do something, because they do. We expect them to do that recognition every time they're working with a patient independently after the eval. So what makes them think they can't do that before that initial eval takes place?
You're right. And I think it goes to data collection versus data interpretation.
Right.
And I think it's understanding roles, and there are PTAs that don't understand the roles, and there's PTs that don't understand their roles as well. And so like, part of it is we've just got to be better as a profession doing those, but that's a great point. So, well, Holly, thank you so much for doing this. And just as a personal plug, besides allowing me the opportunity to teach, which is one of my favorite things in the world to do, Holly has been a great mentor and friend to me throughout the years, and I'm forever, ever thankful for what you do for the profession and for me. So I just want to say thank you.
Well, back at you. I am very grateful for your friendship and your leadership and mentorship. So it's a two-way street, my friend.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. All right, everybody, if you have any questions, feel free to email me. Thank you. Have a great day.
Hello, everybody. Dr. F. Scott Field here, and we don't do this nearly enough. I wanted to thank you as an audience for being here, for listening to the shows. Without you guys, we wouldn't have anybody to geek out with over education and learning and teaching and educating. So thank you for being here, for being, you know, faithful listeners over the years. Also, if possible, we'd love to ask a favor. We don't do this often, but if you could leave a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen to this podcast, We would greatly appreciate it. It helps boost our rankings and our algorithm and really just helps get this message out to more people out there in healthcare education who may need, you know, some of the episodes and the experts that we interview. So if you could, like I said, leave a rating and review, we would greatly appreciate it. And we will see you on the next show.